Now, I'm going to ask our Christian, Jewish, non-religious, and other listeners to imagine for a moment that you are a Muslim American in the months after 9/11. News stories are impugning you and your heritage, and strangers in the street shout slurs and perhaps physically threaten you. Your children are ostracized at school, and perhaps the only place to take a breath in the midst of all this hostility is your own community in your own mosque. Now, imagine finding out only years later that a wholesale program of profiling, infiltration, and surveillance by police was in place for more than a decade in precisely those few supposedly safe spaces. It was learning of just such violation that led Muslim advocates, as well as a long list of other supportive organizations, to file suit against the New York Police Department in 2012. Yet despite the fact that this shocking level of surveillance did not lead to even one arrest, earlier this year a court dismissed their case. Now Muslim advocates and diverse allies, including Interfaith Alliance, are appealing that dismissal, and here to brief us on the case is Glenn Caton, the legal director for Muslim Advocates. Glenn, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thanks so much for having me again.
So could you start by expanding just a little bit on that summary and the extent of the police surveillance of Muslims in the New York metro area? What exactly was going on?
Well, it's difficult to overstate the level of surveillance. You mentioned mosques and community centers. It went way beyond that to really every establishment that had anything to do with Islam, and often even secular establishments like a Dunkin' Donuts or a dollar store if they were believed to be owned or frequented by Muslims. So in the series of stories and the documents that were released, the NYPD went to every Muslim establishment, not only in the five boroughs of New York, but also in much of New Jersey, in upstate New York, in Long Island, and even into Pennsylvania and to Connecticut.
So this was really widespread, pervasive surveillance. And when the lawsuit originally was filed, the court dismissed it. And what was the rationale behind that decision?
So the court dismissed it really on procedural grounds, but the procedural grounds are kind of tied to the heart of what we're claiming here. So there were two bases for the court's dismissal. The first was the court said that the plaintiffs did not suffer any injury that's recognized by the Constitution. And this comes up in constitutional cases pretty often. For example, if you had the classic case of someone standing in a park with a sign, and then police officer says, "You can't have that and I'm going to eject you from the park." What's that person's damages or injury? It's not like the classic court case where someone says, "I lost $200," or "You wrecked my car." So the one fight is over the ways in which our plaintiffs were harmed. And there were several different types of harm that we're alleging. And we obviously disagree very much with the court's conclusion that our clients were not harmed by the surveillance.
So when you talk about harm, what is your argument that they were harmed? How were they harmed by this program?
So we have about five different types of harm that we have categorized. The one is the basic act of categorizing people based on religion, just like with race, is a harm, and it very obviously conveys an inferiority or an ostracization. An example of that would be, you know, you have white and black water fountains. If both water fountains are equally clean and the water is equally cold, how does the black person say that I've been injured by this arrangement here? And the answer is that the government is sending a very clear signal about the races when it does this. And our first argument is that when the government says, when in this case the New York City government and the NYPD, we need to watch all Muslims, and we are going to do that through surveillance cameras, informants, undercover officers, that they are sending a very clear signal that Muslims are inherently suspect.
So since the court originally dismissed this case, we have new details that have emerged regarding the extent and even the tone of the surveillance involving the FBI and the NSA. Tell us about what's been reported just last week, thanks to our leaks by Edward Snowden.
Yes, we've known that a variety of law enforcement agencies have been targeting Muslims for special surveillance based upon their religion. And just to be clear, you know, nobody that I know of in the Muslim community, and certainly not Muslim advocates, is saying that if the police or the FBI have a lead, you need to pursue a legitimate lead, whether the person is Muslim, Christian, or atheist. You know, this is not about traditional law enforcement methods used to pursue a real reason to believe that there's wrongdoing. The problem arises with the FBI, the NSA, DHS, NYPD, which have a variety of programs that go after Muslims or Muslim, Arab, South Asian Americans based upon their race or religion. And that's where the problem arises. And in that article by The Intercept, it shows that the FBI and the NSA were going after Muslim leaders in the community, directors of organizations, lawyers who represent foreign interests, all of which are done by, you know, hundreds or thousands of Americans, and big law firms represent foreign governments. But it certainly doesn't appear that the NSA is spying on them, listening to their phone calls and tracking them.
So really, then, the bottom line is that this was not just some rogue element spy program, but this was a really widespread surveillance program targeted at American Muslims.
You know, it certainly appears to be the case. With the Intercept article, there is not the abundance of evidence of what exactly the program entails. It certainly looks that way, that Muslims are being targeted in a systemic way. With the NYPD case, there are 8 reports that in very great detail go into the targeting of Muslims and say, we're going into the Egyptian community of New York, oh, but we're not interested in the Coptic Christians. We're going into the Syrian community. We're not interested in the Syrian Jews. With the NYPD, there is such an abundance of evidence of what's going on. With the other surveillance programs and with the other racial and religious profiling programs, there are some evidence, but not the abundance that there is in New York.
Why do you think we're not seeing more widespread response to these revelations of this surveillance program?
You know, that's kind of an interesting philosophical question. My view is that, like so many times in our nation's history, there are groups that just get portrayed as the others, whether it's African Americans, whether it's Japanese Americans during World War II, you know, Jews, Catholics. So many groups have gone through it where they're not, quote, real Americans, or they're not us, they're a them. And post 9/11, Muslims have been the them, and people don't see the way the Interfaith Alliance and all of the religious groups that joined the amicus friend of the court brief in support of our plaintiffs see the bigger picture, that when the government does this against one religious group, and if we let the government get away with it, next time it could be Jews, Catholics, Sikhs, Hindus, whoever. And it's very important that the government not have the power to do that. I think many just average Americans going about their lives kind of have the feeling of, oh, well, they're just spying on the Muslims, so maybe that's not the greatest thing to do in the world. But after all, it was this one group of Muslims who perpetrated 9/11. So in a very superficial and attenuated way in some people's heads, that justifies this massive surveillance.
Right. So even though this case is about Muslims, the legal principles at the heart of the case really affect all Americans.
Yeah, they are the most fundamental legal principles that the country was founded on in terms of religious freedom and the government not disfavoring one faith. And then the other constitutional principle of equal protection of the laws that arose after the Civil War is designed to protect race, religion, and some other protected classes against government classification based on those things. And they are all vitally important principles to all Americans.
Glenn Caton is the legal director at Muslim Advocates, which is working to guarantee freedom and justice for Americans of all faiths. And you can learn more at MuslimAdvocates.org. Glenn, thanks for being back with us today here at State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.